Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to the Speaking of Sex podcast. You can find the complete podcast archive at PleasureMechanics.com and can suggest topics for future episodes or record us a voicemail message by heading over to PleasureMechanics.com/hello. On today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Andrew Gerza. Andrew is a disability awareness consultant who focuses on the intersection of sexuality and disability. Andrew, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Hi, Chris. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Get us started by sharing how you came to focus on sex and disability. How did this become your life path?
I came to this path of sex and disability in a really roundabout way. I actually went to school to study law, and my plan was to become a big lawyer and do, I wasn't even thinking about disability as my life path at all. I was like, I have a disability, but I'm not going to let my disability define me, which is hilarious now because now it does totally define what I do. But at the time I was young and I was headstrong and I wanted to go be a lawyer, and I'd watched a bunch of Law and Order, and I thought that somehow made me qualified to go into law, which it didn't, because I very quickly realized, I did a 4-year BA, which took me 6 years because of my disability. So I did a 6-year BA in law, and I still kind of liked it, but when I was done the BA, I was like, what am I going to do now? So I started saying that I wanted to still look at the law, but I wanted to look at disability too. And so I did an MA where I created it through my university, because at the time they didn't have any programs around disability in my master's program. So I had to kind of do a bunch of independent study and ISU stuff around disability. And what I was looking at was how laws like the ADA in the US and something we have in Ontario here called the AODA, which is the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. It's like the provincial equivalent of the ADA, which makes it a joke because it doesn't actually work in practice. So I was looking basically at how both the ADA and the AODA in Canada, they're great on paper. They're not so good in real time. And so that's a long roundabout way of saying that as I was doing this work, I was looking at the attitudes of people with disabilities, and I was realizing that a lot of the attitudes haven't changed since like the 40s, 50s, I mean, even hundreds of years. The attitude is like, whoa, disability is scary, we don't know how to deal with that. And so at the same time, I'd come out years before, but I was navigating my queerness and I was navigating all these things. And I was like, no one's talking to me about my experience as a queer guy trying to get laid, trying to have experiences. No one's really doing that with me. And so I felt like it was something that I wanted to tackle. And somehow, during my university days, the world kind of came together, and so one day about 4 years ago, I was sitting at home on my computer looking at porn, as you do when you live by yourself. I was looking at porn and just enjoying it, and I thought, you know, I wonder if any of these sites have looked at people with disabilities. And so I started emailing some queer publications in Toronto and just said, have you guys had anybody with disabilities talking about their story? And overwhelmingly, a lot of them said, no, we haven't. And I said, well, I'm here and I have a lot to say. Can we talk about it? Within a day and a half of that phone call, I had a photographer at my house saying, I want to take photos of you with your shirt off for this magazine. And I was like, well, that's okay. So I did that, and again, at the time, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, thanks for that. But then, slowly, I was like, wait, I have a lot to say. I could turn this into something. I want to focus on the emotional aspect of disability that nobody's really talking about.
And here we are. Thank you for doing this work. So there's a lot of misconceptions about disability and sexuality, and I want to tackle them. I do want to say that disability is a huge umbrella that covers a lot of different lifestyles and experiences. And so we want to focus on the idea that you're speaking from your experience and I'm speaking from mine. And for anyone listening, just know that nothing we say can apply to everyone with disabilities.
Yeah.
Right. But what are some of the biggest misconceptions about sex and disability that you tackle in your work?
The biggest misconception is that I can't have sex. Tied in with the idea that I don't want to have sex. I have said in a recent podcast that I did that I tackled the myth of, do you have a sex drive? And I said in that podcast that, yeah, I have a sex drive. And I would posit that people with disabilities tend to have higher sex drives and higher desires for intimacy and sex because we've been so often denied it. So when people think that I can't have sex, that's just a fallacy. And when they think that I don't want to have sex, I just laugh because I'm like, of course I do. It isn't going to be your conventional, what we consider sex to look like. It may look very different from what you think sex is supposed to be. But I find it interesting that people will just assume that I don't want to have sex and that's not something that I... And they'll ask me that outright, like, oh, do you even want to have sex? And it's like, would you ask somebody else that on the street?
Hmm. And do you think this perception of like desexualizing people with disabilities comes from this idea of the broken body, and if the body's not perfect, it therefore can't be a sexual object?
Yeah, I think especially in queer communities, in my experience as a queer man, the idea of a fit, somebody who, quote, takes care of themselves, I see that all the time because I access all the apps to look for dates or fun or sex or whatever it is I'm looking for. So I access all of that to really get into my community because it's the most accessible way for me to access my sexuality. So I'm on all these sites and all these apps. And the thing I overwhelmingly see from people is like, oh, you must take care of yourself. You must go to the gym. You must be this. And I look at that and go, well, I don't fit that. I don't fit that. So even if I'm somebody you're totally missing out on, if you think my body's broken, then you're not going to want to have anything to do with me. And I think that's a really sad state of affairs that we've reached, that if you think that my body isn't normative enough for you, that I'm not worth getting to know and spending time with. And I'll say that even I fall in that trap as a queer man. I've been indoctrinated by the idea that the only guy that I could ever be with is somebody who is able-bodied and, you know, muscular. And there's ways that I've rationalized that to myself. Like, oh, well, I need them to lift me out of my chair, so I need them to be strong, or I need them to be able. And that just shows how deep the ableism, even for me, somebody who does this work and challenges that all the time, can still get wrapped up in, oh, well, I want the ideal that is, you know, that is not real and not, and really, frankly, unhealthy. This idea that we have to be a certain way and have to be able enough to have sex is just really, it's damaging to our emotional well-being, I think, as people.
Are there other myths about people with sex and disabilities that you confront on a day-to-day basis?
So many myths. So, like, there's the one about how, well, I mean, the primary one is that I can't have sex and that I don't want to. But then we go into, like, shouldn't you be dealing with stuff about rights? And shouldn't you be dealing with stuff about, like, the access and the law? Shouldn't you be dealing with, like, different things that are more important than sex? People ask me that all the time, and I'm like, well, I am dealing with something that's very important to me. Like, sex is very important to me, and access to my sexuality is extremely important to me. And so when people think that I shouldn't be thinking about it, it's like, what if your ability to have sex was taken away from you and not given to you? And it's not that you couldn't have sex, it's that nobody thought you could, so nobody offered it to you, or nobody saw you as sexually viable. What would happen if that? And I always throw back to them and say, well, how would you feel if that was you? And they'll go, well, I don't know, because it's never something I've experienced. I go, yeah, but it's something that people with disabilities experience every single day. And I mean, the emotional toll that takes on the disabled body and the disabled mind and the disabled view of themselves can be really hard.
So let's talk about that emotional landscape for a while, because when we talk about your access to sex or people understanding you as a sexual being, it goes way beyond, you know, fucking and orgasms, right? It's about intimacy and companionship and worthiness. So what are the ways this plays out for you? And, like, how do you think about the place of sexuality in the life, the larger life of a human being?
I think that the way we look at the disabled body, we don't equate it to pleasure. And that's just a shame, because there's so many ways that the disabled body can provide pleasure that, the able-bodied body can't. Mm-hmm. Because we learn about different erogenous zones. We learn about emotional accessibility. We learn about vulnerability. That's some of the first things as disabled people that we're forced to confront, just being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is one of the sexiest things that I'm able to access first. Like, I am, when I have sex with somebody, even if it's just a one-time thing, I am 1,000,000% emotionally invested, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff that has to go into me even getting to the naked part. So by the time I get naked with the person that I'm spending time with, I want them to be connecting the experience. And this whole hookup culture that's pervaded kind of queer male, specifically in my case, male sexuality, it sounds hot and exciting to just meet somebody in a bathroom and fuck them. I mean, that sounds great. But realistically, I don't want that. I want somebody who's going to want to spend time getting to know my body and getting to know what works and getting to know that I'm kind of the Meg Ryan of the situation, in that I'm in that I'm a hopeless romantic and I want Tom Hanks to show up in Seattle and be my lover forever. and so that vulnerability is really sexy to me, and I don't think people realize how important these encounters are, and how when you're really having sex with me, what you're doing is you're allowing me to access my vulnerability, and I'm giving you a really, this is going to sound really cliche, but I'm giving you a really important gift, in that I'm allowing you entry into a world that I'm terrified of. Like, I love sex with disability, it's important, but at the same time, when I'm with somebody who's able-bodied, and when I'm with somebody who doesn't really get it, the whole experience for me is both exciting and terrifying. I'm terrified at any minute that this person's going to decide that, whoa, this is too much, I can't, I'm out, bye.
Yeah, and I think that's a fear that probably we all have underneath our erotic minds all the time. And and it's the fear of rejection, the fear of refusal. But also for you, how does it play out in how you have to redefine sex? Because so many able-bodied people come to sex with a very specific script that we learn from porn, that we learn from culture. And how does it play out differently for you? Because you can't just be on autopilot. How do you approach someone with your body as it is and talk to them and communicate about how you need to be touched, what you want, what you're able to do?
That's hard. And that's something that I've been tackling with ever since I started this work. Mm. And I created a term that I use sometimes when I'm with lovers or significant others or people that I'm fucking or whatever. Whatever configuration of that I'm doing that day, it's something that I call storyboarding my sex. And what that means is I try, sometimes it doesn't happen, but I try to sit down with my partner prior to the sex and say, okay, this is my disability. This is what I want versus what I can actually do. Now, what do you want? What can you do? What can you offer me? What can we offer each other? I try to really have a frank conversation with them. Now, that's hard. Sometimes I don't want to do that. Sometimes I want to just start making out and see where it goes. But I try to talk them through. But also, that's exhausting work, like being the one with all the knowledge or the supposed knowledge. Sometimes I don't know what's going to happen, and sometimes I don't want to run even by my own script. Hmm. So it really depends on the moment. It depends on the person I'm with. If I see they're really scared of what's happening and they're not generally comfortable with what, they're not sure what to do, when they're kind of into it, but they're not sure, then I'll walk them through. But if I see that they're, like, before I hook up with somebody, the first thing I ask is, hey, have you been with a guy in a chair before? And that's, I'm asking that question for two reasons. One, I want to see how quickly you'll say yes or no, and whatever you answer will guide me into how I should treat the oncoming interaction. And then, after I ask that on an app, I'll say, like, hey, want to go on Skype? So I make sure you're not, like, yeah, so I make sure that we've talked and met face-to-face, so that by the time you enter my home or I come to you or whatever it is we're doing, I feel some sense of security that you're not going to be leave me in a really vulnerable, unsafe state. And again, during that conversation, I'll ask them, like, so, this is my disability. Here's what I need. What do you think? and I lay it out, make it very clear, and I give them every chance to exit as cordially as they want, to protect both myself and to not make them feel like I put them in an awkward position. But I mean, even with all that stuff, the minute they enter the sexual realm with me, they get all, it gets, sometimes can get uncomfortable, where you can see them like, what do we do now? How do we? And it's just because they want to know. And so then I'll guide them. But when I'm guiding them, I try to make it sexy and I try to make it fun. And I try to like interplay that with like, okay, let's, I gave you that direction. Now let's stop for a minute and make out. And then I'll give you the next direction. So that it's not, so the whole time I'm not therapeutically turning this into some weird physio sex thing that it doesn't necessarily need to be.
Interesting. And I think this, you know, the storyboarding, the laying out, the getting of consent at every stage is something that we can all learn from, and be with our bodies as they are in the moment. How do you deal with couples? Do people ever come to you with like a new disability, that it's something that was a sudden onset, either through an accident or an illness, and have no idea how to kind of remake their sex life with a changed body?
Actually, when you and I did our podcast a couple of weeks ago, you're one of the first people that was like, so here's what I'm going through and let's talk about it. It doesn't happen very often. I'd like it to happen more. I think people are just afraid to come to somebody and talk about this stuff. But it's funny because I did an article a few weeks ago where I wrote about anal sex and I put it up on HuffPost and I put it everywhere and I got people to read it. And people, I got 5 or 6 responses that the first 24 hours that it was out from people saying, oh, I'm disabled and I also have these issues, or I'm disabled and I want to do this, or I want to try this. So I think people do want to talk about it. I think we just don't have enough avenues for which to talk about sex and disability, frankly. And I think when we do talk about sex and disability with whatever disabilities, whether it's a new onset disability or it's a something that we're used to, like CP or MS or something, I think that we don't know where to start. And so I think that that's why we need podcasts like mine and podcasts like yours and outlets for people to click and not necessarily be the one bringing up the issue, but hearing someone else's story and saying, oh, that I see myself in that. But I would like people to come to me more and bring me their stories, because I don't know what I can offer except, you know, my experiences and some advice, but at least knowing somebody that's going through similar stuff. Like when, I loved our conversation because our disabilities are completely different, but the emotional response is so similar that I was like, yeah, everything that she's saying totally resonates with me, even though we don't have the same experience. So I think people with disabilities talking about their experience, whether we're talking about sex or just the experience of disability, talking about it together and creating that unity is so critically important.
Okay, so here's your official endorsement. If anyone listening to this has developed a disability of any kind or finds their body changed or knows someone who's struggling with this, go talk to Andrew. He can be an amazing coach for you and guide you through the new landscape as we navigate our sexuality in our new bodies. Our conversation, he's referring to his podcast, Disability After Dark. And a few weeks ago, I was the guest on his podcast and talked about my new disability with diabetes. And that conversation was really healing and helpful for me, just to have a compassionate ear. So I think he's offering this beautiful service. So get in touch with Andrew, everyone.
Thank you. That was a powerful conversation we had. I listened to it again. And I actually, when I listened to it, I was tearing up at parts where you were tearing up because I was like, oh my God, we understand each other. Like, it was just so, it was, I think those stories and what I, and so along with Disability After Dark, I'm going to plug myself again. I've just launched Disability with Drew, which is the other side of the work that I do, which is the non-sexual side of the podcast. So it's a different podcast where I talk about disability in society and culture. And so what I'm doing with that podcast, the plan is to let disabled people come and tell me their stories. Whatever story they want to tell me about their life as a disabled person, I'm welcoming that story. Things we never really talk about around emotional, like accessibility, things around transit, things around attendant care, all the stuff that people with disabilities go through on a day-to-day, I want this podcast to be to shed light on that. And so if anybody wants to come and tell me any story, whether it be sex or whether it be just disability culture, I welcome that, because I think these stories and us doing it together, like I said, create such a unity and such a bond that I don't think other people understand how nurturing and how good you feel after you talk to another disabled person about tough things, that you feel really, okay, someone gets it, someone's going through similar stuff, I can take a breath now. And I think having that in podcast form, so somebody can just click and listen to these stories and hear themselves in these journeys, is so important and so necessary.
I want to close with a question about self-love. We often talk about how it's so important to love your body as it is and have an evolving sense of self-love as we grow in age. What has self-love meant to you in your body over the years?
Self-love is so hard to reach. I don't know if I'm there yet. There are some days where I hate my body. Like, especially right now, I'm going through some health stuff myself. So right now, my body and I are not the best of friends, which is why I'm diving into the work to, like, make myself feel better. But for self-love is hard, because when you're disabled, like we are, nobody really gives you the self-love, or you're not supposed to love yourself. You're supposed to be sitting in your mobility device or sitting in your broken body, sitting in your house alone in the dark, crying about how sad you are, about your disability. That's the narrative that everybody thinks that you're living. So to find confidence and self-love, and I think self-love is important, because it doesn't mean you can't have days where everything has gone to shit and you hate. There are days where, I mean, I work in disability awareness, this is what I do, but I also, there are days where I fucking hate it. I don't like it. It's not a happy place for, I'm not happy about it, but I still see that as a part of self-love, because I'm acknowledging that, you know what, today is shit. That's okay. Tomorrow might be better. Or tomorrow could be shit too, but at least I'm living the experience. And I think people think when we reach a point of self-love that we're all like fairies and rainbows and unicorns, and that's great, but that's not what self-love is. Self-love is acknowledging that you have days where it sucks and days where it hurts. And I think disabled people need permission from themselves to say, you know what, I don't like my disability today. I really don't like it. And I'm going to sit and I'm going to feel that. And I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to let people know. And so when I post stuff on social media, there's a lot of stuff that I'll post that isn't happy. But that's part of self-love, because I'm using that platform or my podcast or guesting on this awesome podcast to share my story. And that, the ability to share, is part of my self-love process. Let me tell you what's really happening. And so I think self-love is owning whatever it is and feeling whatever it is, whether it's happy or sad or great or not so great, feel it all the way through and know that it's okay to feel that. That's, I think, the true definition of self-love that we often forget.
Beautiful. Thank you. And what cultural changes, this might be too big of a question, but what cultural changes do you want to see to make it easier for people with disabilities to enjoy their sexuality?
Oh, that's a big, loaded question. Cultural changes. We need more physical accessibility in sex-positive spaces. Mm. We need more media representation of sexuality and disability that isn't fetishized to a ridiculous point. We need pictures of people with disabilities naked and ready to entice somebody into that experience. We need more podcasts. We need more things that people can access easily that aren't in. The trouble with sexuality and disability is that it's so easily talked about in the academic sphere or in different circles that nobody in popular culture would ever read. So when I was studying when I was doing my work on disability and the law, I was also secretly doing work on sex and disability to like see what the landscape was. I wasn't supposed to, but I did anyway. And so what I found was that everybody was talking about it in these big academic papers, but nobody was talking about it in pop culture because disability is not sexy. We need to find a way to make disability sexy, not like conventionally sexy, but I mean sexy by talking about the reality of disability. So if you have a condom catheter, if you have an indwelling catheter, if you have something that is would be seen as scary, talk about that. And talk about how that impacts your sex and how that makes sex better or worse. Talk about that. Make it something that pop culture needs to listen to. And I think pop culture needs to get on board with disability really fast and needs to stop talking about, when we talk about disability in pop culture, we only look at it through like two or three lenses. Accessibility, everybody deserves access, but no one's talking about emotional access, which I don't understand. Then there's the narrative of you are disabled, so you need to overcome this disability and become the super crippled, like happy version of yourself. That's ridiculous. No, like why? Or there's you're pitiable and sad and should be in your room crying. Those three tropes are not the are none of those are the reality of disability. The reality needs to be, hi, I'm Andrew. I'm living with a disability today. Here's how that feels. And I should be able to find stories like that in every popular magazine, on every website, because at some point, disability, as you well know, Chris, disability comes on like a freight train, and sometimes you don't know what you... And I remember in our conversation, you said, like, there wasn't... I didn't have a lot of knowledge about what to do, and I kind of had to learn. Wouldn't you have felt better if you could click on a podcast or open up a magazine and see something that represented you that could guide you through the beginning part? I would have loved that if I was 14, 15, 16, you know, 17, 18, trying to navigate being young and queer and crippled. I would have loved that. So the work that I do is not just for me to have work. It's for me to leave a cultural imprint for the next generation of people who are experiencing disabilities, so that when they want to find somebody or something that looks like them, they don't have to go so far. So I want to create content that is easily accessible to everyone and will last for years and years and years and years and will be available at the click of a button.
Well, thank you so much for doing this work. How can people find you?
They can find... First, I'm so glad to have been here. Thank you so much for having me. They can find me at www.andrewgurza.com. That's AndrewGurza.com. There's my podcast. The two new podcasts will be up there soon. My blogs are up there. Contacting me. I also do presentations via Skype or in person. So if anybody has some money and wants to come and talk about disability, I'm happy to do that. I also, if you want to just talk to me about stuff and come and be a guest on the podcast or just have a discussion around disability generally. It's my job. And so I'd love to hear from people.
Beautiful. Thank you for all your work. We will link this all up on the show notes page at pleasuremechanics.com. And let's all of us go out into the world and be more compassionate with our bodies and with the bodies of all of our fellow humans and recognize the sexual being that lives within each of our bodies. And just give that lots of love, because that's what you inspire me to do. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Cheers.